Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Steve Morris, Assistant Director of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division, or CJIS. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Chris Traynor. Steve, what is the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS? What is the time frame for having the NICS operation running around the clock 7 days a week, and how many delayed denials will be prevented by the new schedule?
The FBI's role in supporting that mission is to conduct background checks on potential buyers that are trying to purchase a firearm. In a nutshell, the way it works, Mike, is an individual walks into a gun store, fills out an ATF form, a 4473, answers a few questions on there, provides some biographic data, name, date of birth, different things. That firearms dealer, or that FFL, will then pick up the phone. They call in. The call goes into a call center. The call center, when they take that call, the FFL provides that name and biographic data to the individual on the phone at the call center. Basically, what they're doing is they're searching three databases. They're searching NCIC, see if this person's wanted, to see if there's any other record in NCIC that might trigger one of the prohibitors. And I think there are about 10 federal prohibitors right. That would prohibit an individual from being able to possess a firearm. So they'll run NCIC. They'll run what we call III, which is an Interstate Identification Index. And that's where our criminal histories reside. Those are fingerprint-based criminal histories. So when a person gets arrested and their mugshots and fingerprints are taken, that information populates the III. So that's really the bread and butter, because that's where you find folks, for the different prohibitors. And then I also search what they call the NICS index. And the NICS index is basically, so if you think about it like this, and this is one of those things that a lot of folks just don't understand the process, so it's very easy for them to just hear things reported on the news or whatever, and they draw conclusions when they really don't understand the process. So the NICS index is really a system. So if a person gets arrested, they have fingerprints, and they have a criminal history, that's going to go into III. That's where it needs to be, because it's used for other purposes, for other civil background checks and different things like that, not to mention law enforcement conducting investigation. You got NCIC. As I mentioned, that's our database of person and properties files. So there are other records, however, that could trigger one of the prohibitors from a firearms background check, like mental health records. That's a big subject. Well, it doesn't mean you've been arrested, so your information is not going to be in III. At the same time, it might not be an NCIC, because if there's no warrant for you, you've never been wanted for anything, you might not be an NCIC. So there needs to be another repository. So the NICS index was created as a third repository to put other records in there. It also puts, if individuals have been backgrounded before and found to be prohibited, then they'll put those in that NICS index, so it's a quick check. So if it comes back as a positive hit in the NICS index, then you don't have to do a lot of research. So it's a kind of a quick reference. So those three databases are the databases that are checked by that call center when the FFL calls. And so if it comes back and there's no record in any of those databases, the individual is proceeded, or they're given a proceed. The FFL is given a proceed to transfer the firearm. That happens more than 70% of the time. In the roughly 28-29% of the time, when there's a hit to one of those databases, then somebody within the FBI's got to look at that and see if that hit is actually who it is, who it could be. So that those calls then get transferred to the FBI. That's where you've been hearing a lot of reporting here recently about the staffing, the additional staff for the FBI to process the volumes. Because when we started this process back in the late 90s, at that particular time, we had roughly 500 folks to support that process. And that's just not 500 folks answering phones. That's people processing appeals, because there's a part of the legislation is processes to allow an individual to appeal a denial. So there's a lot of other processes that kind of wrap around the core business of NICS. So in the late 90s, when there were about 500 people doing that, we processed roughly about 4 million transactions. Well, fast forward to today, and last year we did over 8.3 million transactions, but our staff roughly remained pretty steady or pretty constant. So from just a pure mathematical standpoint, the volume has exceeded our capability to continue to handle. So, and then you throw in other challenges, like we mentioned earlier about dispositions, records not being in there or incomplete records being in there, then that requires a lot of research. And when you start getting on the phone, literally calling other government agencies to get this information, it can be time consuming. And we have to get all this done from the time that FFL calls for the background check, 3 business days, a decision has to be made. And that's an extremely important decision. So that's in a nutshell how the process works.
Can you talk a little bit about the plans to expand the staff in order to conduct the NICS checks?
Yeah, so obviously our big plan is to, like I mentioned earlier, just from a mathematical standpoint, you know, the volume's increasing, our staffing is flatlined. So we obviously got to increase our staff to keep up. But also, I probably should have mentioned too, as we're focusing on the staffing in our processes to try to build some efficiencies there, one of the things that we also are doing is we are replacing the original IT infrastructure that was used to do those searches of those databases and how that information is shared among those databases. And for the past couple of years, we've been involved in a development project to replace that legacy hardware and that legacy process, and we refer to it as new NICS. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to roll out the first phase of that system sometime in the fall of this year. Our goal there, earlier to your point, Mike, is to right now the system as it currently is designed and as it currently runs now, it goes off. We take it offline sometime after midnight or whatever, because part of the law requires us to purge every record out of it every single day. So transactions that come through for folks that are exercising their Second Amendment right to purchase a weapon or a firearm, that their information has to be purged every night. So we take the system offline every night. We purge it. And then we put our patches and different things we have to do. And so it's offline for anywhere from 5 to 7 hours every night. Part of our goal as part of the IT development is to create a system where those purges and those changes occur while the system continues to run. So we don't have to go offline. Because one of the things that we are emphasizing with our NICS process is leveraging what we call e-check, is our online background check process. And we've seen a significant increase in the number of FFLs that are using e-check versus picking up the phone, calling in and standing there and talking to an operator and talking to an examiner. They can go online, submit the information online, and then go about doing their other business. We have folks that process those. They pull it off online. They process it. They send them the results so that it comes back to them in a notification. They don't ever have to talk to anybody. That's very efficient. So one of the things that we are leveraging is the e-check process. And so in order for that to really work and to really provide some benefit is for the system to be up 24/7 to do that. So that's one of our goals with the new NICS system is to leverage that 24/7 capability.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the National Data Exchange, which is also known as NDEX. That system provides cross-jurisdictional information sharing platform that's accessible to law enforcement agencies nationwide. Can you tell us what the current participation rate among these agencies is and how the FBI plans to increase the participation in NDEX?
Sure, Chris. I think we rolled NDEX out I believe in 2008. And obviously, for those that NDEX is the acronym for National Data Exchange. And really what that represents for us is it's a system that was actually envisioned when I was at CJIS in 2005. I actually had the program that was looking at developing this system called NDEX. And at that time, the concept was, you know, there's a lot of information. It's the proverbial connect the dots conversation that you have, folks. Well, it's easy to connect the dots if you know where the dots are. So one of the things that we talked about back then, you know, over 10 years ago, was a lot of those dots sit out in the records management systems of the law enforcement agencies that are out engaging the public and doing their law enforcement work. And that's essentially what NDEX does, is it's people, persons, things, places, and it really taps into incident reports and different things that that law enforcement agencies populate in their system. So since Index has been around since, and again, I think it was the initial capabilities of that was rolled out in 2008. It's been a work in progress. Obviously, it's one of those things, build it, they will come. It's been slow going early on, but now up to date, we have over 500, almost half a billion records, 500 million records are currently either exist within Index or accessible through Index. And that's records that are supplied or provided access by over 5,000 agencies out there. Last year, I believe we had about 30,000 users access Index. We did over 4 million searches on it. So it's growing. Probably not growing as fast as I'd like, but that's part of our effort is to continue to go out and engage agencies and get that participation going.
I want to jump ahead because I think this is it's sort of an important effort that you guys launched last summer, and it's the Biometric Technology Center. Could you tell us about its mission, its purpose, what it's set to accomplish? And I understand it is a joint project with DOD, the U.S. Department of Defense. Would you explain to us how the law enforcement and military needs kind of intersect and what the economies of scale that's realized?
Within the federal government, you really have, I consider, three primary or principal repositories that have the largest holdings of biometrics. You have obviously the FBI's Next Generation Identification. You got Department of Defense's ABIS system, their automated biometrics identification system. Then you also have DHS's, used to be called IDENT, their identification system that houses fingerprints and biometrics on individual foreign nationals and folks that are traveling in and out of the country. So we've been engaged with both of those departments, Department of Homeland Security and Defense, for the last probably 20 years, or at least with Department of Defense for at least 20 years, and then obviously since the inception of DHS, to make those systems interoperable. And what I mean by that is we don't want to consolidate them because those databases exist under different authorities and for different purposes. And it needs to stay that way. That's that independent mission set that I think is important from the privacy and civil liberty standpoints, because we collect and we house the data under different authorities and for different reasons. Department of Defense does it. DHS does it. So having those separate, it's where it should be. But there's also a need to have those systems be able to communicate with one another. The BTC, the Biometrics Technology Center, really what that represents, that is a brick-and-mortar task force. We are bringing together agencies that have an interest, U.S. government agencies that not only have an interest but a mission that involves biometrics. We need to bring our folks back under one roof. We need to build space for our folks to be able to do their work. And then also DOD had a need as well. So they partnered, they offered, they provided funding. They worked with our construction project team to build the BTC. We cut the ribbon on that facility. Chris, you were there.
I was.
Back in August. It's a beautiful facility. We started moving folks in there in December of this past year, and we started what we call the first phase of our move-in, but now that building is operating. But to answer your question, it really, Mike, it really represents a task force environment. And nothing breeds success like having people in the same room, under the same roof, working together. And so really what that is us harnessing everything, not only that the FBI does, but quite frankly, what the U.S. government does in the field of biometrics. And I know, so DOD is going to be there. Department of Homeland Security has expressed an interest in it. And it wouldn't surprise me if other agencies that we work closely with will have other folks located there as well.
What is the mission of the FBI's Advisory Policy Board? We will ask Steve Morris, Assistant Director of the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division, or CJIS, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.